everyone, and welcome to the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here with you, and if you like what you hear on the podcast, we ask you to please subscribe, like, follow along with us on this. We put a couple out a week in addition to doing our Talking Puck TV live show Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on both Twitch and YouTube. So, Mike, as we get ready to go here for this particular iteration of the podcast, this is sometimes we talk about teams. Today, it's a little more about players, and we touched on some of these topics last Sunday night's show. John Klingberg with the Dallas Stars, Evander Kane with the San Jose Sharks, and as kind of more information has trickled out, I have expanded thoughts on both of these. I'm sure you do, too, but also it kind of, you know, you said to me, Tom, what about the bigger picture of the league and the NHL and where the sport is moving forward? And I think that's a really interesting and thought-provoking topic. So let's open with your thoughts on that and just kind of, you know, what is going on right now? Are we seeing not just one or two players, but really an overall and league-wide change in attitude among members of a union, so to speak?
Absolutely, we are, Tom, and it you better accept it. You better join the march, or you're going to be left behind. I think if you're a general manager or running teams now, you may not like it, but this is where the league is going. And when we heard the news about Klingberg, and I'll say the same thing for Evander Kane, when Klingberg said, "I don't feel appreciated. I want to get out of here," in essence.
That was Kane's train out of town right there.
Yeah. That's right. And Klingberg's on the platform waving.
So. Yeah.
Hey, if you can slow down, I'll jump on. But let me make sure that doesn't happen again. I think that my first reaction when Klingberg said that was, "Oh, that's wrong. You can't do that. Was that old school mentality of being around hockey for all these years. That was my first reaction. The more I thought about it, I thought, well, I may not agree with how he does it, but I came to the awareness of this is where it's going. It's in all the other leagues now. This you could say selfishness, or it's about my brand. It's about me. Where hockey's always been about team first. Things are changing. The younger players are coming in the league. They want communication with the coaches, with the general managers. They want to do their social media. It's there is a difference now for these players, and if they don't feel appreciated, they now know that they can go someplace else. Boy, Tommy, in the old days. And Evander Kane, if he acted like that and you didn't want him, you could bury that guy and you make a call to all your old school buddies, the other general manager, go, we're burying this guy. And he's done. His career is done. But things have changed now. You can act the way that Kane did. You can act the way Antonio Brown did. We can go through all the different leagues. It's now seeped into hockey, Tom, where you can be a bad guy, but if you have a little bit of talent, there's going to be a team that's going to give you an opportunity. The old Oakland Raiders, those guys would, you know, remember those in John Madden's days where they bring in all the characters. And I think, but more than that, we're seeing guys are now more in control of their careers. And even if you're not a good guy, even if you say outrageous things, you're going to get more opportunities. But more the biggest picture, though, I think, Tommy, is this is where the league is now going. You don't like it? You're now part of the old guard. New, younger general managers are going to have an understanding of how to deal with these young players.
And two, you know, one thing. All right, Mike, this is one thing where I've been a little slow to come around, but I'm still an eyeball test guy. I want to see the way a guy performs on the ice. I don't believe analytics tell you an entire story, and I think you can do anything you want with numbers. Look, I worked in sales alongside of broadcasting for 15, 20 years. I know you can make numbers do what you want. But analytics, I think, is part of this, too, where maybe... does that make it easier to argue for a player in a sense, or maybe because this is part of the new way of evaluating players, Does it make it easier to save for a guy? Well, you know, he might not be the best person. He might be adverse in the locker room or whatever. He may have these off-ice problems, but look at his 5-on-5 expected goals for. You know, and argue things like that. And so teams go, man, 5-on-5, we're not very good. We could use a guy with a good 5-on-5 expected goals for. Does it make it easier in a way to make a case for keeping a player and giving them yet another chance because of things like that that are now, I guess, a little more tangible?
Absolutely it does. In the old days, it would have been somebody going, I don't like, he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy. Don't want him around. Now you've got these, and I will tell you this. My son is going off to college next year to study sports management and major in sports analytics. It's now a major in colleges. And you're going to get guys coming in that are looking at the numbers, and that's it. And I wonder about scouts and guys who played, you know, most of the scouts, and you know, you've been there, you've been in the press box, and these guys, the scouts are former NHL guys, and you know, and they know people, and they, you know, it's a whole dynamic of, well, what do you think about this guy? What do you know about this guy? But boy, now that the numbers are coming in a little bit, that's a great point. You wonder how much that's going to eventually move over the top of just, like you said, eyeballing and knowing and talking about a player. I think there's going to be a big shift. I really do. I think the league is changing. But more, though, than just the analytics, it's the attitude of the younger players who have been coddled, spoiled, and the way they've been treated their whole lives, and they expect that now to be the way it's going to be in the National Hockey League, and they're getting treated that way. And I don't think that's coming back. And to use your train analysis, it has left the station. And but more importantly, you better, as an organization, figure out that that's where the league is going and learn how to deal. I don't think you can be an old guard tough guy anymore. And I think you have to deal with players differently.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's one of the reasons why Evander Kane probably will get another chance. As much as I wouldn't be the guy to give it to him, someone will take that chance on him. Now, of course, there's the fight right now. The appeal has been filed, and they're trying to protect the remaining $22 million on his contract,
wow,
which is
a lot of money.
Not an insubstantial amount. Of course, they're going to, you know, try to.
Yeah.
And that's what the union does. You know, the union, 100%, they're going through exactly what they should do to try to protect a member player. But at the end of the day, if the contract is terminated, which I think it will be, you know, other teams, somebody had a tweet, and I wish I could remember so I could properly attribute this, but it basically said NHL teams with Evander Kane is $7 million. No, he's detrimental. He's a problem child. We don't want to deal with it. And Evander Kane at $1 million. Well, we've done our due diligence, and we believe this won't be a problem going forward.
Right.
But it's so true. Like, the lens through which they view all of these transactions is an economic one. And I think that people forget hockey is the game, but the NHL is the business. And that's what, if a team sees at $1 million, a guy who could potentially make a positive impact, even though he probably won't be there for your playoff run, a positive impact, at least down the stretch for you, they will take a chance on Evander Kane. And they don't necessarily care about all the baggage, especially if maybe you're just saying, hey, man, prove it. You get the rest of this year. Or someone might offer him a second year. You know, but buyer beware if that's the direction you want to go. And in a way, I want to get Klingberg in here, too. I know we've been talking about this for a minute. But Klingberg, the more I think about this, so he's 30 years old. And he is not the featured defenseman in Dallas anymore. More information's come out. He's looking for an 8-year deal. Well, he's 29. He'll be 30 when the contract kicks in next season. So he's looking for an 8-year deal. He wants someone to sign him until he's 38 years old. He wants big money, way too much money for even what he's producing now, let alone buying all of his 30s, which I always think is a huge mistake in a contract. Man, I don't want to invest heavy in a guy beyond 33, 34 max.
No, of course not.
Max. So him saying he wants out and saying, well, trade me right now. Okay, and apparently this is not new. He's been saying he's wanted out for a while. He's just finally gone public with it. At the beginning of the season, there was kind of a sense from Klingberg he wasn't going to be there. They didn't want him long term. Okay. But that's the other thing, too, is this unrealistic expectation of, well, I need to be signed to a long-term deal, and everybody wants that long-term deal, and agents tell their players they can get a long-term deal, and the problem is someone will give it to him. Somehow, someone will give him maybe five or six, or one oddball will give him seven. I don't understand how or why, but that's the problem, is somehow we have to continue to save general managers also from themselves, which doesn't help the situation. And then they have to go bail themselves out later from these horrible contracts. That's not the player's fault.
No, Tom, I think the biggest problem, I think any fan and maybe even other players and maybe even general managers can understand a player saying, I want more money. I want security. I want this deal. I think the problem is, and this is where the NHL is going, it's the words, I don't feel appreciated. I think that's the problem. That rubs people the wrong way. If you are a fan and you're paying $150 to watch a game and you're watching this multi-million dollar guy play a sport and he says, I don't feel appreciated, I think that turns people off. But again, I thought long and hard about this, and I thought, this is where we're at in our society and in sports, where guys were paid all this money and they feel that they're not appreciated, and they don't, and they're not afraid to say it out loud in the public. That is an amazing change in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying that for years there weren't players who thought, I'm not appreciated, but wow, now these guys feel comfortable and fine of saying it out loud. And I think we're going to go through a period where fans are just turned off by it. Other general managers are turned off, but I think we're headed down that road where these players are not afraid to just say those kind of things, and it's going to become more and more accepted. We're going to see more and more movement with guys who are looking for greener grass, and we're looking at a big transition period here in the National Hockey League, I feel.
And, you know, I think that is the paradigm shift that's happening in just corporate America, too.
Sure.
Employees are saying, you know what? I don't feel appreciated or valued for working 80 hours a week when it's only supposed to be 40. And the reward oftentimes is not, here's a raise, here's more vacation, or anything like that. It's, hey, I'm going to heap more work on you because the people around you can't handle the work. That's your reward. Burn yourself out. So, and I'm not saying it's the same with Klingberg. Klingberg is not burning himself out on the Dallas Stars defense. But this is a mindset change that I think you're right. There is rise to the comfort level of expressing these feelings now. And with pro athletes, where there's millions of dollars on the line, I think agents may even be encouraging guys, hey, if you don't think you're getting what you want right now, be vocal about it, because there might be a GM out there who's like quietly behind the scenes, or maybe not so quietly, but let's say, I don't know, Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, somebody looking for a defenseman likes Klingberg, calls and says, you know what? I know Klingberg's a bit of a problem for you guys in Dallas. Let's kind of work something out you know, we'll make that deal this year and then see if we can get it for the long run. Or maybe somebody wants it. He wouldn't be a bad rental at 30 years old for Edmonton. Would you put John Klingberg on Edmonton? I know he's an offensive defenseman more so than really a shutdown guy, but man, that's better. Tell me Klingberg would not be among the top six defensemen on the Edmonton Oilers. I think interest.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying there's not interest. And I'm not saying that somebody's going to give him some money. I don't know if he has to go somewhere else, he only gets a 7-year deal. But that's still a long time for John Klingberg. But somebody's going to give him some money. Somebody's going to give him some years. And this is going to work out for him. And there's not going to be blowback on him saying, I don't feel appreciated. He's going to get his money. That's just the era we live in. And boy, I can be the, you know, the old guy in the corner not wanting the kids running in my grass, and say that you read article after article about young kids coming into the workforce out of college who have been spoiled to death, mm-hmm. who don't understand work ethic, and they just think that they're just going to come out and automatically get paid a lot of money and have it easy. And it's, the real world is not like that, but boy, things are changing. And that's what's happening now in the NHL. And you watch. So if Klingberg, let's you and I really keep an eye on this and see what happens with him. And if he ends up going somewhere else and getting a big contract long term, and you've got to think that there are players in the league that go, well, that worked out for him.
Right.
He didn't. He got his money in his term. And he's you know what? I don't feel appreciated. I wonder, you and I need to keep an eye on this and say, here was a real turning point in the NHL when if this works out well for Klingberg, if there's other players that want to follow suit.
I'll give you my three quick targets in order for Klingberg. Number one, okay. Montreal. Number two, Ottawa. And number three, Arizona.
Well, they've all got money to spend, right?
Yep. Yep, they do. And Montreal, I could see maybe wanting the veteran guy. Ottawa, you know, and Arizona is going to throw contracts at somebody to try to get them to come down there or wherever they are.
Or do you really think Arizona? I thought they just wanted to go really young. I mean, I know they need to spend some money to get to the floor, but I think they just want to, they want to be bad, right, for a few years and spend the minimum amount they have young players grow together. I mean, that's the plan for Armstrong, right?
It is.
I don't know if Klingberg fits into that.
He did talk about needing to have some veterans on that team, though, because you can't have a bunch of 24-year-olds leading each other around. That's not good for development either.
No. Especially when you're not winning.
Right.
Because then everybody then has a whole just a malaise of losing.
Right.
And it's hard to break out of that if that's all you've had in the early part of your career. And you have no veteran guys who go, hey, things are going to get better. Hang in there. When it's just young guys losing, it's easy then to just have everything fall apart. Agreed.
So we'll see how that one plays out, but I think you're right. It could open the gateway to more people, and not that players don't express that they're unhappy now, and sometimes they do it through their agent. We know Alan Walsh loves to use his social media, case in point, the Marc-Andre Fleury situation last year and the year before with the whole graphic with the sword sticking through Fleury with the word DeBoer on it. Yeah, some are a little more overt than others, but Mike, this could be interesting because, look, at some point, contracts are contracts, and unless we decide to go the way of the NFL, which I can't see the NHLPA ever doing, where contracts are not guaranteed and you can be cut at any time, until we reach that day and age, guys are going to have to, you know, make their demands vocal and sometimes plead their case in the public, and maybe they're getting more comfortable with that, and we're going to see a lot more of it.
Oh, I think, and again, let's keep an eye on what happens with Klingberg. And then if other players, you know, next summer start voicing their opinion that they are unhappy.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Talking Puck podcast. So that's Mike.
We're not unhappy.
We're not unhappy. We love doing this thing. You want to tell Mike how unhappy you are? Get him on Twitter at BusterTheDog33.
I'm not a psychologist. I just play one on the podcast.
That's right. Mike will work out all of your problems, mental, physical, and then tell you you're wrong and why you're wrong.
That's what I'm best at.
That's right. That's right. And you can always get me at Callahan on Air on Twitter. We do this every Sunday night live with Talking Puck TV, 9 p.m. Eastern time on Twitch and on YouTube. Look for Talking Puck TV. And of course, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and follow along here. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, Mike and I, Dr. Mike, Dr. Tom. We will talk to you next time.